Hello and welcome to the podcast version of Scripps 5 Must Know Things, this time for the business week ended 22nd March 2024. This is Ian Haydock. In this episode, another big deal in radiopharmaceuticals, BioNTech's ADC pipeline, China CDMOs embrace uncertain future, a look at the rivals in MASH, and industry views on how AI might be transformative. AstraZeneca first involved itself with Fusion Pharmaceuticals in 2020, striking a deal to develop novel alpha emitters. Now the UK giant has made a more definitive move, paying $2 billion up front to take Fusion over, Elizabeth Cairns writes. In doing so, the UK major is following the path blazed by its big pharma peers, Bristol-Myers Squibb and Eli Lilly, both of which have closed acquisitions of radioconjugate developers in the last few months. But it's the success of Novartis that all these groups are trying to emulate. AstraZeneca is paying $21 per share in cash for Fusion, plus a contingent value right of $3 per share in cash payable upon the achievement of a specified regulatory milestone, likely the approval of Fusion's lead asset, FPI-2265. If this is paid out, the deal will be worth a total of $2.4 billion. FPI-2265 is designed to treat prostate cancer by binding to prostate-specific membrane antigen and delivering the radioisotope actinium-225. The agent is in a Phase 2 trial, TATCIST, interim data from which will come at the AACR meeting in San Diego in early April. This will give the first indication of whether AstraZeneca's move will pay off. Behind FPI-2265, Fusion has three other radiopharmaceuticals in the works. FPI-1434 is in a Phase 1-2 study in a range of solid tumours, from which data might emerge later this year, and the Phase 1 study of FPI-2059, also in solid tumours, could report a year later. FPI-2068, an EDFR-CMET-targeted radioconjugate, began a Phase 1 trial in solid tumours late last year, though data are not expected before 2026. All these assets use actinium-225 as their radioactive payload. While a Fusion buy is Big Pharma's latest acquisition of a radiopharma company, it may not be the last. A handful of smaller groups have promising assets in mid- or late-stage studies and have seen their share prices rise on the basis that they look like tempting targets. BioNTech is looking to compete with the likes of Pfizer, AstraZeneca and Merck & Co. in the hot area of antibody drug conjugates or ADCs for cancer. The German biotech, powered by cash from the sale of the COVID-19 vaccine Comirnaty, in-licensed four clinical stage ADCs last year through three partnerships with Chinese firms, and CEO Ugur Sahin said the company is focused on accelerating their development, Jessica Merrill writes. We believe ADCs have the potential to supplement or replace highly toxic chemotherapy regimens as the new combination backbone of cancer treatment, he said during the company's fourth quarter results briefing on 20th March. The company brought in three ADCs through two deals with Duality Biologics, gaining the HER2-targeting ADC DB1303 and others. Shortly after, the company signed another deal with a different Chinese drug maker, Suzhou Medilink Therapeutics, gaining the HER3-targeting candidate YL202 in Phase 1. Our strategy for acquiring these specific assets was based on their potentially differentiated profile, the objective of covering multiple cancer types, and the broad markets they may address, Chief Medical Officer Özlem Türeci said. DM1303, also known as BNT323, has jumped to the front of BioNTech's pipeline. The company initiated a Phase 3 trial in January testing the ADC in chemotherapy-naive, HR-positive, HER2-low metastatic breast cancer in patients whose disease has progressed on prior endocrine therapy with or without CDK4/6 inhibition versus investigators' choice of chemotherapy. BNT323 is a third-generation ADC that aims to overcome the drawbacks of first- and second-generation ADCs to achieve a high stability in circulation, low risk of target payload delivery, a high drug-antibody ratio of 8, and an expanded therapeutic window, Türeci said. BioNTech's growing pipeline currently includes only one other drug in phase 3, the CTLA-4 inhibitor BNT316 in PD-1L1 experienced non-small cell lung cancer. But the firm has 5 programs in phase 2 development and 9 in phase 1/2. Amid WuXi AppTec's withdrawal from the Biotechnology Innovation Organization, or BIO, and the still emerging consequences of the proposed US BioSecure Act, multiple executives from Chinese biotechs and contract research, development and manufacturing organizations, or CDMOs, are embracing a more uncertain future, Brian Yang writes. The high-profile departure of WuXi, the leading China-based biopharma services company, from the US-based Biotech Trade Association, has sent shockwaves through the sector in China, and its further ramifications are just now becoming apparent. WuXi AppTec and affiliate WuXi Biologics draw roughly 70% of their business from the US, and BioSecure would likely disrupt customer drug companies' supply chains. One CEO of an antibody development company in China told Scrip the recent events are likely to accelerate US-China decoupling moves in the biotech area. US market potential remains significant to the Chinese biotech sector, and the move by WuXi shows that Chinese biotechs may have to accelerate steps to spin off their US businesses from their Chinese operations, they said. Some have already taken concrete steps. Nasdaq-listed I-Mab Biopharma recently announced the separation of its US and Chinese operations, involving the transfer of rights to 3 leading pipeline assets to a new Hangzhou-based company. There have also been reports and social media posts that China's leading innovative biologics developer, Suzhou-based Innovent Biologics, is winding down its US-based research subsidiary, which had focused on antibody-drug conjugate research and disease mechanisms in the oncology and immunology areas. Another major Chinese biopharma firm, BeiGene, is accelerating market diversification in the current international situation. I think geopolitical tensions will continue to be the case, predicted Michael Schoen, a strategic advisor and special assistant to BeiGene's CEO, at the Leerink Global Healthcare Conference on 11th March. China is an incredibly important part of what we do, both on the R&D side but also on the commercial side. But the majority of our revenues now outside of China, that percentage will probably continue to grow outside of China, he said. The company is also acting to diversify its active pharmaceutical ingredient manufacturing and supply, which, like many biotechs, relies in part on WuXi AppTec and its affiliates. Importantly for us, we are already in line with second source manufacturing for APIs. Very far along on that on a non-Chinese supplier, noted Schoen. While the proposed BioSecure legislation is still in the congressional process and potentially not up for a vote until later this year, Chinese CDMOs and other firms are already preparing for worst-case scenarios, as evidenced by the moves above and the pursuit of clinical sites in both the US and China. Innovent's wholly-owned CDMO subsidiary, Altrus Bio, is actively seeking overseas opportunities, but with a focus on the US and Europe. The domestic China market is very competitive, and given the current economic downturn, the competition is going to become fiercer, noted the company's R&D manager during the recent BioChina conference in Suzhou. While the US biotech sector has shown signs of rebounding, the expansion is a natural decision, they said. Madrigal Pharmaceuticals' Rezdiffra has become the first ever approved therapy for metabolic-associated steatohepatitis, or MASH. The company has a lead of a couple of years over its next most advanced competitor, Novo Nordisk's semaglutide, in the disorder. But how does Rezdiffra stack up clinically? Analyses in Elizabeth Cairn's story use reported data from the phase 2 trials of selected MASH agents and pit them against Rezdiffra's showing in its phase 3 study. They show the improvements they have achieved on various endpoints and, crucially, how these change over time. Interestingly, several of the newer products appear to outplay Madrigal's first-mover status. The comparisons use data from different studies with different enrollment criteria and designs and should therefore be treated with caution, since only a head-to-head trial can provide a truly robust comparison. The two crucial endpoints for MASH products to hit are improvement in fibrosis, defined as a reduction by at least one stage on a scale from 0 to 4, with higher stages indicating greater severity with no worsening of MASH, and MASH resolution without worsening of fibrosis, which is defined as an increase of at least one stage. On the first of these important goals, fibrosis improvement, Rezdiffra appears to beat Novo's semaglutide. But no fewer than three of the phase 2 stage contenders, Acaro Therapeutics' efruxifermin and 89bio's pegozafermin, both FGF21 analogues, as well as Inventiva's PPAR agonist lanifibranor, look better, at least at their higher doses. That said, recent 96-week data on Acaro's therapy, while notable, appear to show a slowing of the rate of improvement from the 24-week data cut. A late entrant is Ionis Pharmaceuticals' antisense product ION224, which on 13th March was revealed to have shown a respectable improvement on this goal at 51 weeks. While the rival's performance on the MASH resolution endpoint is plotted against time, a similar pattern may be discerned. Only here, efruxifermin's efficacy really did wane over time, at least for the highest dose. Of note, this analysis suggests that Rezdiffra is in fact the weakest of these MASH drugs as far as MASH resolution is confirmed. See the article in full for all of the comparative data and how the various contenders stack up against each other. Finally, the extent to which artificial intelligence and technology are fundamentally altering the R&D game came through during a panel discussion by Eli Lilly's Chief Information and Digital Officer, Diogo Rau, and Bristol-Myers Squibb's Chief Digital and Technology Officer, Greg Myers, and others, in a panel discussion at the recent BioAsia conference in India. The panelists also discussed applications of generative AI, for instance, in drawing insights from data generated by wearable devices and the challenges in using resulting data, and also the use of AI manufacturing and market access models, Vibha Ravi writes. Lilly's Rao narrated success stories with its AI model-based discovery that opened a hitherto unseen portal, overcoming limitations of human thinking in the drug discovery process. Similarly, BMS's Myers mentioned how cell therapy candidates could benefit from early detection of adverse events like a cytokine storm. As leading global pharma companies, both Lilly and BMS have embraced the use of AI. Among Lilly's prominent partnerships are those with Google parent Alphabet and its digital biotech company Isomorphic Labs for small molecule therapeutics, XtalPi to discover and narrow down potential candidates, and FaunaBio for discovery efforts in obesity. Meanwhile, BMS has partnered with Concert AI, Aukin, Tempus, and Paradigm to leverage AI for improving clinical study designs and reducing trial costs. At the BioAsia meeting, held in Hyderabad, Rao spoke of machines generating molecules that no human would have imagined. He said that last year, Lilly took a few molecules that were machine-generated and had really unique structures that didn't look like anything that we knew much about. They only were somewhat similar to three molecules in our database, and even then, remotely similar. These were then taken to the laboratory, with the company asking the chemist, "Tell us what's wrong with these molecules, so we can train our models better." But the chemist then said, "Hey, that's interesting. We hadn't thought about doing it that way. So we decided to go make those molecules. One of them is still in the running as a candidate." One of the things that gets lost in the whole discussion around AI and drug discovery is not just how we train our models, but how our models train our humans, Rao observed. Fanny Mitra, Chief Digital and Information Officer at Indian company Dr. Reddy's Laboratories, also pointed to AI opportunities in R&D, manufacturing and market access models that could make medicines accessible and affordable to a larger population. The process of in silico digital twinning helps save costs and time as the process of transfer from lab to the plant is becoming more complex, increasing the potential for failures as things are scaled up. So there are a lot of AI-led interventions that we are thinking of in that space where you can predict the scale of outcomes even without taking it to the plant, apart from use cases around yield optimization, he mentioned. The article also takes a look at wearables and related data issues and the use of Gen AI to cut go-to-market times, so do check it out in full. That's all for this week. Many thanks for listening. A reminder that all these stories are linked in the description and are available to subscribers by logging in. If you don't already subscribe, sign up for a free trial to see what you're missing. Bye for now.